Hello and welcome to That's What She Said, the fortnightly feminist podcast where we discuss current affairs, a badass woman from history, and your listener stories of the inspirational women in your lives. With me, Nina Attridge.
And me, Hannah Thacker.
Hi, Hannah.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm alright.
What be new? What be kicking?
What's new in my life?
Specifically kicking, though, please.
What is kicking?
Yeah.
Nothing is kicking.
Oh.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like, what's kicking?
What's kicking?
Why have I started talking?
I don't know. Who are you?
I've changed.
2 weeks.
Fame's changed me.
The podcast world. Yeah, I know. I've gone it's to your head much. Already.
Yep. Mm. I'm going to be one of them.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Like, aside from all the usual stuff in my life, I recently went to a music conference in Manchester called Off the Record, which was pretty cool. Yeah, I went with a lovely girl from Liverpool called Bex.
Nice.
Rebecca. She has many different, like,
I believe they call them nicknames.
Yep. Yes. One of them. And yeah, it was fun, and they were giving out free coffee, which is
dangerous.
And it was like proper like barista style. Mm. So I think by the end of the day, everyone was like jittering on caffeine overload.
That's great. Like, not instead of being drunk, you're just caffeinated.
Yeah,
I feel like that'd be
worse. I think everyone was like super hyped.
Everyone would be anxious. Was there not people just crying in corners?
I was getting anxious. So then at 2, me and Becca went out for lunch and filled up our portable coffee cups with with beer.
Oh.
And so we were just sat there looking like we were drinking the free coffee and we were actually drinking beer from 2. So that's I had a cool. great time, yeah.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah, made lots
did
of friends.
Did it not make have a beery aftertaste? What, no, I mean coffee? A
coffee. Oh, I got the person to wash it out at the bar, obviously. I'm not
I wouldn't
an amateur.
Trust them.
Not an amateur. She loved it. She thought we were great.
I love that. That is cool. I went to something with free coffee yesterday.
Did you?
Oh, segue.
We need like a segue jingle.
A bell.
A bell?
Wait, what did you do? Like,
It's called a jingle.
No.
You want a jingle bell?
Word.
That is word association right there.
That's what we do. 1 hour, 15 minutes, jingle bell. No, like a swear, no. What am I trying to say? Like a swear jar? No. Doesn't matter. Anyway. Free coffee. Nina went. Event.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I went to a seminar at uni about learning how to motivate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like giving you it was run by the counseling service, so it's giving you like cool psychology tips on not just tips but like we did loads of activities and stuff as well on learning how to like be more self-motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And learning what stops you being motivated.
Probably yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert. It's always yourself. But one of the activities asked you to think of a situation that you find it difficult to motivate yourself in. Or what it said was think of a task that's complicated and difficult to achieve. Write it down and then write down the things that prevent you from doing it, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And what can you do to take steps to achieve it? So I wrote getting out of bed, which I thought was a pretty decent example because it's difficult. And
yeah, it's difficult for a lot of people.
It is very difficult. Mm. I can't do it all the time. And there's like I think the steps I put to achieve it were like setting an alarm, and the things preventing me were being tired and being lazy and bed being comfortable. But we were asked to report back to the class, and I went first, and then the guy that went after me, the guy running the seminar, asked this guy what he'd written, and his thing that he found difficult to motivate himself to do the complicated task was to solve climate change.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Fuck him indeed.
Yeah.
And not in the literal way.
Ew.
Why is that ew?
Don't know. Just don't
ew
like him.
Sex.
Don't like him already.
Yeah, I hope nobody... No, that's me. Somebody should, but not me.
Hmm?
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
I'm just expressing that I don't want to have sex with this man. But no, he was a sausage. No. Oh my god. Yeah, so that was fun. That was a thing that happened.
Yeah.
Got me some likes on Twitter, which is why I do everything I do.
Yeah.
So, cool.
All the funny things you put on Twitter.
Great, aren't I?
What was it you were saying? You're going to put it private because of employers.
Yeah, I just don't want them to see me tweeting about being late for work and not knowing how to tie my shoes and...
You're just a sharer.
I am an... yeah, big sharer. I don't like to say oversharer because I think I'm sharing the right amount.
Only
everyone else
knew.
Is wrong. A sharer.
A sharer.
Indeed.
You should put that on your job application because then you're just being upfront about it.
That's true, actually.
I'm a sharer.
I feel like when you're applying for administration minimum wage jobs, they don't care. They don't want to see my creative output.
Oh, they might care.
Well, that's why we keep looking.
Mm-hmm. So, shall we get into some current news?
I believe we should.
Yes. Do you want to go first?
We could go forever. Yeah. I was going to say, do you want to start with the good news or the bad news? But I'm pretty sure I've only got bad news.
Okay.
So, let's go. I believe you have probably seen on the Twitter... and the other internets. I can't start this with laughs because it's horrible.
Okay. I'm winding the laughs back.
Yeah. So, there was a case recently in Cork, in Ireland. A 17-year-old woman was raped and she pressed charges against the man, the rapist, and it was taken to court. And as we've seen many times in history, it got to a point where the lawyer defending the rapist used this 17-year-old woman's underwear as evidence in the trial. And I quote, "You have to look at the way she dressed. She was wearing a thong with a lace front." Immediately.
Wow.
You just couldn't be clearer putting the blame on her in some way. It's ridiculous. It's painful to hear.
Okay.
After this, the defendant was acquitted in a unanimous verdict, but that actually kind of bullshit because don't verdicts have to be unanimous?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah.
Or is that just in America?
Unanimous. Does that mean everybody was on the side?
Like no. The whole jury. They do in America. They have to talk it out until they've reached a conclusion.
Oh yeah, I mean they do. I've done jury duty.
Have you?
Yeah. It was actually something not too far off from this.
Ooh.
I know. That's maybe for another time.
Yeah, you're probably not allowed to talk about it either.
I think it's fine. It's like in the news.
You've never told me this.
I have this whole other life.
What in the fuck? Are you a lawyer?
No, I was just you were forced on jury to go to jury duty for 2 weeks.
So did you have to reach a unanimous decision?
Yeah, and I was the last one to actually change my mind.
Ooh.
I was the one who made us stay an extra day. Everyone
well, that's
hated
good.
Me.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah. The deliberations with the jury only lasted an hour and a half, and then they decided that the defendant was not guilty, despite a shit ton of evidence saying that he was.
Right.
So this has sparked a lot in the past few weeks, month even, I think. A lot of outrage, a lot of protests across Ireland. There was the city council of Cork suggested staging a protest. 8 days after the end of the trial, this was after he'd been acquitted, and over 500 people turned up. A load of them were like carrying underwear, and then this started the hashtag "This is not consent," as in underwear.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably what you've
I think
seen.
This is where I've seen it is with on Instagram. I think it's been like predominantly where women in Ireland have taken pictures of their underwear and basically saying this isn't consent.
Yeah, it's horrible. The hashtag was "I believe her." Right, I'm with her. So there was one of the other responses to this was the Labour MP Anne Coffey has put forward in Parliament that juries should have no place in rape trials, that it shouldn't be a verdict reached in trial by a jury. I don't know enough about the legal ins and outs, but she thinks that juries shouldn't be involved because she thinks that, well, I think there's truth to this, that it's really difficult for a jury to find, especially young men, guilty of rape, even if, as in like legally guilty, even if they believe that they've done it, because it's just not considered sort of severe enough. It's not considered a crime in a lot of ways. And the fact that it will ruin their lives, people do think about that.
Which is really, really irritating, because guilty people who have raped someone else, have ruined someone else's
life. Completely. But
why should they be allowed to carry on like they've not done anything wrong?
And it just sends completely the wrong message to anyone with the potential to rape.
It's like a slap on the wrist.
It is, completely. It's just they've gone through the inconvenience of having to be in court, and then ultimately nothing comes of it. So Coffey, this MP, shared some statistics about convictions from rape trials. So it turns out that younger men aged 18 to 24 in England and Wales are consistently less likely to be found guilty than older men of rape trials, which I think links back to what we're saying about, I don't know, it's kind of like we value a young man's life more than a young female victim's. It's like we're more worried about destroying his future than thinking about what has already been destroyed for this woman.
Yeah.
Which is sick and horrible. The most recent figures on rape also show that the number of rape cases being charged by prosecutors has fallen to the lowest in a decade, despite an increase in the number of incidents reported to the police. So, because I would have thought that the prosecutions were greater because people are becoming more aware of the crime that rape is.
Mm-hmm.
And with Me Too and everything, I would have thought there would be more prosecutions. But in fact, we can see that there's more rapes being reported to the police, but less are going to trial and less people are being prosecuted for rape.
I really do wonder why that is.
I could account for why there's a disparity between the amount reported and the amount prosecuted, but I don't know why it would have decreased. Because police do discourage you from pressing charges. Like, I've seen that.
Right.
Like, I've had friends with incidents at uni where they've been, like, in sort of cases of violence. I've had female friends report things to the police against random men that they don't know, and the police actively discourage them from pressing charges, even though what they've done is a crime. I've actually heard them say, like, oh, well, it would be a criminal record of this, or the sentence would be this. Do you really want to ruin his life? He doesn't seem that bad. Yeah.
Whoa.
I know.
That is some, like, severe bias towards young men.
It's crazy. I've heard it a few times. I mean,
I've actually never heard of this. I assumed that the reason, you know, a lot of cases aren't brought to is because women report it and then maybe they get cold feet and they don't want to go ahead with it.
That's
but I didn't realise the aspects of pressuring.
Yeah, I think there'll be pressure. Obviously not all, hashtag not all police officers.
Yeah, there's plenty of good police, I'm sure.
But in terms of, I don't know, it's just at the discretion of whichever police officer's handling the case. If they don't see it as a big deal, just in their language and the way they talk to you, if they don't respect that you feel like a victim or are a victim and they don't treat you as one, then you're just not going to pursue it.
Mm.
Because it doesn't, because they know more than you, ultimately. If you're just if something were to happen to me and then the police started talking to me about legal things, I would assume they were right. I'd be like, oh, maybe this isn't a crime.
Mm.
Maybe it won't get prosecuted. Maybe I shouldn't go to the effort. So,
I mean, yeah, that's a whole thing to unpack.
Do you think that this MP, Anne Coffey, has it right suggesting that juries shouldn't judge on rape cases?
I mean, I really don't know enough about case by case things. Like, I think you would have to actually look at all the cases in rape convictions where the jury has played a part. And, like, I do understand that, you know, the media frenzy does play a huge, huge part in these particular cases, and in any cases, like, I don't know why this has just come to mind, but you know the American serial killer Charles Manson?
yeah,
him. So President Nixon, who was obviously president of America at the time, literally put a public statement in a newspaper saying he is guilty.
Yeah.
And it nearly caused the entire trial to be dismissed.
Yeah.
Because of how much that would sway public opinion.
Mm.
And I think when someone is taken to trial for rape, they are automatically splashed across newspapers and portrayed as a guilty person, whether that's true or not.
Mm.
And naturally, jurors? What are they called?
Jurors.
Jurors?
Jurors. You were one.
I don't know.
You sausage.
Oh, God. Okay. I was a fine juror. Yeah, I know. What have you done to me?
Oh, I ruined it.
Jurors don't live in a bubble, so they're going to see things like on their phones, on newspapers, on TV, relating to the case. So I do think that can sway people, and maybe...
But I think if you're going to have juries as part of your legal system full stop, you do have to accept that every individual comes with prejudices and biases, and
true.
I can see... I agree with her. I think that it's really problematic having individual people... Well, it's not like having a jury decide on a rape case is obviously not really working from the statistics shown.
Because of the public mindset
because of this belief that even if they think they're guilty, they don't want to prosecute. Mm-hmm. And you don't really get that with other crimes, I don't think. I think with murder, you wouldn't be like, well, he killed him, but I don't want to ruin his life.
I know.
But then also at the same time... I don't know, that I feel like that's just bringing into question the role of a jury full stop.
And that's, yeah, I mean, if that is changed, that could be like, that could be world changing, really.
Yeah,
so yeah, we'll have to keep on top of that one, see where it goes.
Yeah, it stressed me out. I'm gonna follow it. I don't know,
yeah, try,
I don't
yeah
know what can happen now, but
these things are typically very slow. Like in the last episode I spoke about the alleged rape accusation of MJ from Hookworms.
Mm-hmm.
Checked in on it. There's not been a single new news piece written in the last 2 weeks. These things do take a long time because it's going through the court system.
Yeah.
Which is slow. So, yeah, we'll come back to it, I'm sure.
Okay. We'll have solved it by next time.
We'll have solved it. That's a lot of pressure on us.
Yeah.
Solve the legal system in Ireland.
In the world, Hannah.
In the world, okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, 2 weeks.
Come on.
No problem. It's about the same, that's like that self-motivational speaker.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I should have, I'll go back. If he doesn't, he does lots of classes, this man. I'll go back and be like, I want to solve the global legal system. I'll go, which one? All of them. I want to solve legal things.
Speaking of legal things.
What degree
things
are you doing?
Anyway, speaking of legal things.
Hit me.
So I'm going to go back to the world of music. I know we've done it quite a lot, but this will be like...
okay, it's your thing.
Dipping my toe back in, and then I'll leave it for the rest of the episode.
That's okay.
I found this news piece on Dazed, and a new manifesto from Key Change EU outlines the practical steps the music industry can take to tackle gender inequality.
Good.
Yeah, it's very good.
Good.
If anyone isn't aware of what Key Change is, it's a pioneering music initiative bringing together the industry, national governments, European Parliament and the European Commission with the aim of tackling gender imbalance. And in their new manifesto, they, you know...
Well, I love a manifesto.
Really love a manifesto.
I did a whole class on it.
A whole class on manifestos?
Yeah. What's your favourite manifesto? There's one called the Gay Manifesto that's like really outrageously offensive and really bad. And I did an essay on it because I'm a bit obsessed with it. It's horrible, but I kind of love it.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's really offensive. It's really offensive, but it's an interesting read. Anyway, carry on.
Okay. I did not expect you to answer that question.
What's your favourite manifesto? Oh, mate, I could list 12, so...
Wow. Well, back to this manifesto. So in the article, they pointed out a few key statistics about why, you know, gender equality in music is so important. So, for example, in 2018, just 14% of performers at US festivals were women. 14%. 51% of the world is what we are. It's what women are.
I didn't realise it was that bad.
The gender pay gap at some of the biggest music-focused companies is a staggering 30%.
Yep, cool.
And of the world's 600 most popular songs this year... only 2% were produced by women.
No.
That's ridiculous.
I hate this.
2%.
I don't 12. Know many music.
Is that 12?
12 out of 600.
Yeah.
Bloody hell, Hannah.
That was the best maths I've ever done.
We don't know if it's right.
It isn't about me.
Come on, Hannah.
And there are some, you know, real positives as well. For example, Statement Festival in Sweden.
Oh, that's, I've got something about Sweden coming up.
Yeah.
Big up.
Love Scandinavia and their, like, equality-ness.
Equality-ness.
So, yeah, Statement Festival in Sweden was set up as a direct response to sexual assaults at local festivals, and it's for women only.
Oh, Sweden.
Yeah, they're doing it. And then...
Can I interject really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just thinking of a women-only festival, when I was out on Friday or something, Saturday, I don't know, that's not the important part of the story, a creepy dude, like, grabbed my ass, and then I couldn't see where he went, and I just got in the worst mood. Like, I was just so raging, and I just could not stop thinking about how shit men are in, like, music venues and stuff. And then I saw where he was, and I couldn't be bothered confronting him, because it was a while after, and he was just hanging around on his own, dancing and, like, making eye contact with women. And it just pissed me off so much. I was so annoyed that my night had been ruined just because this one fucking creepy man. And I just, all I wanted at that moment was, I just want a club where it's just women. Imagine how different it would be. It would be so nice and, like...
I mean, me personally, I don't think that should be a necessity. I think it's not the onus on women to separate themselves from men who can't be trusted. It's that
I don't think it should
men
be
need to be taught from an early age how to treat
but
women.
Just like that night, in that moment, I wanted was this lovely, safe place where I wasn't going to get fucking touched.
Have you heard of a club called Pussy Palace?
I know the name, but I don't think I know it as a club.
It's a club night in London, and they promote, like, female, non-binary, transgender, queer people to come out and party with them, and they will pay for, maybe I mentioned these before.
Yeah,
they'll pay for your taxi to the club and back if you feel unsafe travelling through London. Yeah, so places like this do exist, we just need one.
I just have to go to London for
one. Yeah, so back to the manifesto. So the new manifesto builds on key changes tasked to get music festivals to pledge a 50-50 gender balance on their lineups by 2020.
Nice.
And over 130 festivals from 22 countries have already taken them up on this, which is great. So there's new additions to the manifesto, and they've called for a collective action based on four areas they've identified for change, which are working conditions and the lack of senior role models, investments and funding, research into pay gaps and imbalances, and education. They're also really passionate about getting involved with governments, so implementing things on a policy level, and they're encouraging governments to introduce... go on.
This is all key change.
This is still key change, yeah.
Okay.
They're encouraging national governments to introduce mandatory pay gap reporting, which is already done in Iceland and the UK.
Okay.
And they're also asking governments to invest in education for women in music and to make policies that prevent sexist marketing campaigns that objectify women.
Oh,
they're very,
look at them.
They're great. They were mentioned at the conference as well.
Really?
On Friday as well,
What was the gender sit there?
Plenty of female representation. There was, I believe, two all-female panels throughout the day. Okay. And every single panel had a woman on, at least one.
Okay.
And it was generally four people per panel. It was well balanced. Okay. I was happy with
that. Makes me happy.
Yeah.
I forget sometimes because I live in a very female bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because we all complain about how poorly women are represented, but most of us live all of our lives just with women.
Well, not
but
yeah.
It's quite nice. People should move into this bubble with me. The good bubble.
Everyone be in the bubble.
Yeah.
Well, burst in the bubble as you're amazing.
Oh my god!
So Nina used to run a blog in Durham called Burst in the Bubble.
Yeah. That was just weird. Whenever anyone says that now, I'm like,
burst in the bubble.
Branding.
I'm going to compare the Key Change Manifesto to the recent Reading and Leeds headline announcement.
Oh,
yeah.
That's my response to that.
And the headliners this year are Foo Fighters, 21 Pilots, 1975 and Post Malone. Once again, they've refused to put on a single non-male headline act.
Bravo. It's almost like they're trying. I don't understand how that actually happens. Like, what world are they living in where nobody stops and says, guys?
Everyone has. Everyone's criticised them.
Yeah.
They've been criticised by...
But I mean, like, their panel, like, the top dogs that are deciding who they book.
Festival Republic. The head of Festival Republic has come out and said that he will continue to book bands that he believes will drive in his target audience, which are men.
That is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. When people say that,
that men will only come see men play live, right? Yeah, because they're not attracted to women, and
I know, yeah,
they might want to see like a female on stage. Like it's just ridiculous,
and also that's stupid. I've seen this a few times, this kind of denial of the power that they have. It's like, no, I'm just going to book who I think is good without any acknowledgement that that is perpetuating something. If I only book men, that is perpetuating this image of only men being in playing the headline slots at these festivals. It's like, I don't care if you, maybe you personally do only like male artists because you're a twat, but you should probably acknowledge that's not the case for everyone, and that your personal opinion has an effect on the way other people see the world.
And I'm sure there are people who are going to see that lineup and be really, really excited.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, Foo Fighters have not released a good album since like the 90s.
No.
21 Pilots, who, what?
Oh my god, no.
They're like a really they're just like a really commercialised sort of pop punk band, right?
Have you seen BoJack Horseman?
Yeah.
Have you seen the episode of BoJack Horseman where BoJack is in the back of a cab with someone? No, it's not. It's Mr. Peanut Butter.
Right.
And 21 Pilots comes on in the radio in the cab. So he goes, oh, can you change the channel, please? Anything would be better than this. And then they change the channel and it's his ex-girlfriend's podcast that comes on.
Oh, no.
And then he goes, okay, I'll do 21 Pilots. But it made me laugh.
Oh.
But yeah, they're rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. And then 1975, I get that because they're a popular band. They've got an album coming out soon. Post Malone.
Didn't NME say they were... NME gave the 1975 a ridiculous amount of praise for their latest album. It was really bizarre.
Why is that bizarre?
No, they compared it to an album that just... I can't remember. It'd be better if I knew. But they gave it way too much praise and everyone was like, what the fuck are you saying?
I think NME gets very passionate about a select handful of bands. At least in the past, they've actually done quite a lot of change, overhaul, lately.
Yeah.
Anyway, just trying to be measured. I basically think Festival Republic...
I do
Republic,
love Post Malone.
Yeah, well, but again,
but
it's nothing new.
He can stay, the others can...
It's nothing new, yeah. Like, they've had, like, American hip-hop artists on the lineup before. It's not groundbreaking. It's not like Stormzy headlining Glastonbury.
Fully support that.
Yes, absolutely.
So excited.
Absolutely. And everyone I've spoken to. Not that I'm going either, but I'm going to watch it on the telly.
Yeah.
I'll be really happy. So I'm going to wrap that up.
You can't wrap it up with, I'm just reading your notes.
Oh yeah, I'm just basically saying Festival Republic are on the wrong side of history.
In capital letters.
In capital letters.
Please can you read it in capital letters, Hannah?
I don't speak in capital letters.
I'm ready. If you type it, you say it.
Festival Republic are on the wrong side of history.
That was rubbish.
That was my best.
No. You have to lean away from the mic for the full...
No.
It depends who else is in the house. I don't want to wake anyone up or something.
I'm going to shout into the mic. It's never going to happen.
I would if we were in my house.
I'm not a shouter.
I know.
Let me finish a bottle of wine first, then I'll shout it.
Okay, we'll save that to the end, we'll come back to it. What was it you were saying about Sweden before?
Oh, the Statement Festival?
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to tell you some more good Sweden shit.
Okay, great.
This is cool, I enjoy this, I'm going to put my wine down.
I'm going to put mine up.
A constant cycle of wine. Okay. Doobie-doo. Right. This is an article about from the BBC about Sweden doing work to make workplaces more period friendly.
Okay.
So the new Gender Equality Agency of Sweden has given a grant of £44,900 equivalent. Krona is
Krona. Yeah. Cool.
To an organisation called Mensen.
What? Sorry. Mensen.
It's in capital letters.
Okay. Is that capital letter speak?
Mensen. Sounds like... Oh, what's the dog in the...
Benson.
Benson! Anyway, that. It's menses in English. It's the Swedish word for menses. Two, break the taboo around menstruation with period-friendly workplaces receiving a certificate.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you get a food hygiene rating. You get, like, 5 blobs of blood or something for being a very period-friendly workplace.
Oh, sick.
I just made that up.
Oh, did you?
No, they get a certificate that we're a period-friendly workplace. But I don't know if they have a blood rating system. Or tampons.
Maybe I mean, that would be very progressive of them.
That's the only way I would accept this as law. Okay. So they're really focusing on getting sanitary bins. It says hand washing facilities, and I don't know which places in Sweden didn't have hand washing facilities in their toilets, but I'm glad that they do now.
Yeah.
But for all working environments, so professionals outside of offices like construction workers, plumbers and bus drivers, there was like a brief little interview with a female bus driver, and she was just saying how much she hates it when she's on her period when she's at work because you're in a bus.
I can imagine that sucks.
Yeah, I don't even know where they go. I'm assuming when they go back to the depot or something.
Actually, they've done the route, I imagine.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not fully aware of the bus life.
But I believe it's a pretty male-dominated industry up to now. They've not had everything they should have in place. So more on Sweden being le shit. They have a government-led, like, an instruction manual for feminist policies internationally. So they've released a book on how governments could implement and facilitate feminist policies, which is pretty cool. And this is also founded on a belief that they think increasing women's participation in politics at all levels is actually really important for finding a sustainable global peace, that incorporating women into politics more will make a more peaceful world.
I mean, it sounds lovely.
I think it sounds realistic.
Yeah.
I get behind that.
Mm-hmm.
My favourite part of this is that they've incorporated menstrual rights into the arts as well as policy.
Okay.
So there's a touring play called Period, the Musical. I know. But it only plays in schools. It's like an educational thing that goes into schools, but I would 100 million% pay £10 to £15 for that. A stage play, comic books, exhibitions, and a podcast about periods. Also, artwork on the Stockholm Metro by prominent graphic novelist Liv Stromkist.
Stromkist. Okay. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, she's prominent. I don't need to say her name, right? You already know. But yeah, go Sweden.
That's sick.
You got anything else about Sweden, or are we going to have to...
Nothing about Sweden, no.
Not interested then.
Well, we can go abroad again.
Oh, okay.
To Saudi Arabia, if you would like. Hey, no. It's good. Okay. It's happy. Let's get with it.
Yes.
So, I got this off The Independent. So, Saudi women have been protesting against the abaya, which is a full-length robe, typically in black, that covers everything except your head, feet and hands. And okay. They have been protesting against the pressure to wear it by wearing it inside out.
Oh no, that's fantastic.
It's like a very creative, silent feminist protest.
Yes, girls.
Earlier this year, the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, stated that... I mean, I might have still said that wrong, but let's just go with it.
It's okay.
I've said it as it's spelled, so please correct me if you know how to pronounce that. Or praise me for my beautiful pronunciation. I'll praise you. Either way.
I thought it was beautiful. It might have been wrong, just but it's still praise beautiful. You.
Praise you. Do you know that song?
Not your rendition. Wait, let me get Shazam. I'm sure it's going to get it.
All right. back to the story.
A prince.
Yeah, the Saudi Crown Prince stated that women in the country need not feel obliged to wear the abaya as long as they dress in a decent and respectful manner. And this is backed up by the lack of evidence in Sharia law. They say, you know, you need to be respectful, dress yeah. yourself modestly, but they have make no reference to this specific garment.
It's a classic religious book thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Taking it as Bible.
Well, it's not even in the book, so yeah, that's yeah. not... I don't know what your phrasing is.
I don't know, they say like tape. What is
taking
it?
It as the Bible.
Yeah.
I get you.
It was kind of a joke. I don't know if it would qualify. Taking the Bible as Bible. Ridiculous.
Yeah, anyway, so despite this royal opinion and the lack of evidence in Sharia law, women still feel pressured to wear the abaya, hence the Inside Out movement. And it's basically a silent protest against their dehumanisation and their forced inferiority to men.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a really exciting time for women in Saudi at the minute. Like yeah. earlier this year, they were given the right to drive.
I know.
And now they're sort of making their opinions known about what they're allowed to wear.
Yeah.
And it's very slow incremental steps. There is still a lot of gender inequality. There is, you know, still a very religious country and... the religion is currently in the hands of men.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is like a real act of solidarity.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see where it leads.
I think it's so important to praise these steps and some, because it's people often go, yeah, that's great. And then immediately in the same breath would be, but it should already be like that. And obviously it should.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean you can't praise these women for being so courageous and doing something that's difficult to do for their own futures.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get into trouble for wearing a garment inside
exactly.
out. They're still wearing it.
You could always feign ignorant, like, play it dumb.
Yeah, but...
What? There's a movement going on?
That's not what they're doing. It's definitely...
No, I know, I know.
It's definitely a fully-fledged movement.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Like, the Crown Prince has said, ladies doesn't... They don't need to wear this. It's up to them.
Exactly.
Literally, like the royal person in their country.
It's so ingrained though, isn't it? It's
well, they said that about driving and
yeah, no, I'm not saying that means it can't change, but I'm just saying that that's what the prejudice comes
yeah.
from, isn't it?
There's still a lot of women who don't drive in Saudi because they still believe
yeah, exactly,
they need to get
yeah.
permission from male relatives.
Mm.
But you know, things take a long time like this to change, and
yeah, but there's hope.
Yeah, there is hope.
I'm going to be. I'm feeling quite optimistic today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm big on the positive news.
Good, good.
I just did another accidental segue. Are you done with that?
Accidental segue. Go ahead.
I love an accidental segue.
We actually do need a jingle.
But for all different types of segue, especially when they're accidental.
That's the only kind of segue.
No, like
obviously
clunky segue.
This isn't scripted or nothing happens.
We don't even research. We just think, no. We lie in bed at night and think, I bet that's what's happening there.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about that.
I read this article one time.
No, not even read an article. Just conjure it up in our brains.
Wow.
With our, like...
I mean, if I had that
sense.
Level of imagination, I would be, like,
yeah.
writing...
Please, can you stop
books.
Making the world so rubbish? Stupid imagination.
Right. Come on, accidental segue. Go.
Accidental segue. This is just a quick little announcement, really.
Okay.
The BBC have released their list of 100 inspirational...
No fucking way!
Sorry, what? Was that a I did that too? Or was that just a you're so happy that I'm saying this?
It's next on my list.
Oh my God.
No fucking way!
Should we try and say it at the same time?
No.
Wait, you should just...
I counted it in, I backed out.
Okay. Well...
Anyway, yeah, Sames.
Sames.
Samesies.
Oh my God, snap. Jinx.
You can't see this. We're like doing like fingers.
Like spider fingers.
No. Jazz hands?
No, like horizontal. They're not jazz hands because jazz hands, our fingers wouldn't be wiggling.
Sprinkle fingers.
Sprinkle fingers. That's actually quite accurate. Yeah, okay. Horizontal sprinkle fingers just happen. Anyway. Well, who's going to do it then?
You go ahead. You started talking.
We've actually got different information.
I'll just chime in.
No, we've got different information.
All right, sick.
I'll do two sentences and then jump in.
All right.
Seamlessly, please.
All right, I'll try.
Okay. The BBC has announced its list of 100 inspiring and influential women from around the world for 2018.
Mm-hmm.
These are women from aged 15 to 94.
Got that.
You got that?
Mm-hmm.
From more than 60 countries.
Got that.
And it includes leaders, trailblazers, and everyday heroes.
Boop, boop.
What have you got?
Not that.
Beat that, motherfucker. Go on.
I've got some women that it includes.
Oh, I did that as well, but yeah.
All right. Well, let's just see who I've got and who you've
got.
Wait,
did you pick all, like, random ones? Or
no.
Okay, I've done the top five.
Oh, right. Yeah, I did pick.
Yeah, I thought that's
something. Yeah, I picked random ones.
Okay, that's all right then.
Okay, so I've got Jameela Jamil.
I have heard of her.
Yeah.
I didn't know she was on it, though. That's cool.
Yeah, she's on the list for launching the social media platform @i_way. Well, did you see the Channel 4 interview with her
earlier in the year,
basically, about these ridiculous standards of beauty are being emitted currently on by the media?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, like, really dangerous
to
put that message out to women and girls. So, yeah, she's, like, she's been awesome. She's awesome.
She is a dope gal. You heard it here first.
Have you seen The Good Place?
No.
Oh, she's sick in that.
She's in that?
She's in that. She's an actress in that.
Did not know she was an actor.
There we go. Actor. I know, that's terrible.
I didn't do that on purpose.
No,
I didn't
it's good. Thank you. Thank you. I need to not do that.
It's all right.
Okay. We learned. Do you want to pick one?
Okay. Awesome. I hadn't heard of any of mine. And also, I'm really going to really fuck up your names, lovely people. And I'm sorry. Oh, God. The first one.
Oh. Go!
Okay, so number one on this list of 100 women is a 33-year-old social impact entrepreneur from Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a name.
I assume so.
Yeah. So her name is Abisoyi Ajayi Akinfolarin, I think. I'm sorry. But she's started an NGO, Girls Coding, that teaches girls how to code, design, and build websites that help solve problems in their communities.
Mm.
And that's just so cool.
That's sick.
I've heard of this before, actually. And that's very cool.
Yeah, that's sick. I think I'll go for a woman. On the list,
Oh my god.
It's going well. There is a lot of people from all around the globe.
Yeah, as we discussed before, painfully white. Very British.
Yeah. Svetlana Svetlana Alexeeva.
Oh my god, she just said that looking so intensely into my eyes.
Okay, Svetlana is a Russian model who, after surviving a fire that burned almost half of her body...
She's number three.
Is she? Have you got
Continue.
Her too?
Yep.
Is helping people with scars feel positive about their bodies.
Also, she's 18.
Is she?
Yeah.
Aw, little baby, set in the next generation. So proud.
You've messed up my order now. You picked one from right in the middle. Okay, so number two, Esra Al-Shafei, 32, executive director of not-for-profit Majal.org in Bahrain. She founded a diverse number of digital platforms to give a voice to those underrepresented. Oh no. Underrepresented in the Middle East and North Africa. This is really making me happy. I just like talking about great women. I think that's why we started this podcast, funnily enough. Anyway, you'll go.
So I've got one more on my list, which is Shaparak Shahzarizadeh.
I think, yeah.
Yeah?
Sure.
An activist who publicly removed her headscarf to oppose a compulsory hijab rule for women in Iran.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
a good one.
That's very impressive.
That's brave.
That's very brave.
Much braver than I am.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree, actually. Normally I'd be like, you go, girl. Like,
but not that.
You are that Brit. Not no, in that case. Sorry, no, can't
I'm
give
not
you
on
that.
The BBC 100 list.
Not
but
yet.
Yeah.
Oh! Okay. I've got two more. I'll just...
Go ahead.
I was going to say jizz through them. I'm not going to do that.
I mean, that's very aggressive. Jizz through them.
I'm just going to jizz through these last two.
It's going to publicly masturbate through these.
Publicly? Where are we? Anyway, number four on the list, we've got Litz Alfonso. She's 51. She's director and choreographer from Cuba. She's created an internationally recognized fusion dance company, which has performed in hundreds of cities around the world.
Ooh.
I hope she comes to England soon and tell me how to pronounce her name. Litz. Yeah, that sounds cool. Okay. And number five, Nimco Ali, 35. She's a writer and activist from Somaliland. And she is an award-winning FGM activist.
Cool. Yeah.
You're all really sick women. And also, if we play this cleverly, we've got, like, a lot of material for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah, because they've only announced the first 20 women.
No, they haven't.
All right, maybe how many have they announced?
100.
They've not. They announced the first 20, and then over the next 3 weeks, right?
I saw a load.
Okay.
Maybe I read last year's. No.
I don't know. Well, I think over the next... Basically, it's the season of the BBC 100 Women for the next 3 weeks, and they're going to be sharing these stories over that time. So we'll get to know these women more and have more to share.
I want to see some interviews so I can get some name pronouncing, learn some more about accents.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I love this. It makes me feel positive and happy.
Yeah. It's a great initiative.
Yeah.
Who goes now? Because we both went at the same time.
I know, that's crazy. But I initiated it.
Okay, I'll go.
And therefore, that maketh it your turn. Can I have some wine, please?
Yeah, you can have some wine. All right. On November 19th, it was International Men's Day.
Yes, I've heard of them.
So
Please, Hannah, tell me what a man is.
Well, every year I'm like well into celebrating International Women's Day. Like, I usually write something or I do something that's very like pro woman, especially in my industry. And so I saw this article popping up from the National Student about International Men's Day, and immediately your brain triggers like, what the hell, like meninists wanting the day of their own. But this student writer, Jack Mills, and I said Jack Wills, and
that's a different thing.
Very different, Jack Mills. He's actually put across a really like well thought out and balanced view of the day, and I actually think it is very important.
Oh yeah.
So I'm going to start off by reading a quote of his, which is, "The idea that men do not need a day of recognition is a key part of the issue which International Men's Day seeks to overcome, and a significant contributing factor in the environment of toxic masculinity which has become prevalent across the last two generations."
Yep. Bang yep. On. Yep.
Yep. And he also includes some heart-wrenching statistics. Currently, there are around 12 men a day in the United Kingdom that take their own life, and suicide is the biggest killer of men under the age of 35.
I've heard that statistic before, and it's disturbing.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this quite a lot over the past few years, about men in society and how obviously mental health awareness has really increased, especially towards young men, because they have been sidelined possibly by their own culture for a long time. And at the minute, with all of the different revolutions for people who are non-cis males, you can imagine that being a white cis male especially, it's less stable than ever before. Like,
there's a lot of like academic research on this, and about how that this instability that white cis men are feeling is such a massive like concern, and it's a big cause of a lot of like global problems, and like not individual faults obviously, but it's something that we really need to explore, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is entirely like weirdly connected, but I was watching 999 Watch Your Emergency last night.
Okay.
And it's like about a police force base in Wiltshire, And they were saying, like, for such a small county, they have noticed such an uptake in violence, especially perpetrated by and towards young men.
Mm.
And they're saying it's a lot of it has to do with this kind of destabilizing.
Continue.
Yeah. Of their role in society.
Yeah.
And especially, think about, like, men our age, maybe a little bit older, maybe younger, the role models that they grew up with,
mm.
who had a place in society, they had a role to fulfill, they no longer have this path to follow.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're angry.
All the role models are fucking up.
Yeah.
We talk about there not being women in the jobs that we want to do, or, like, visible enough women of different races, et cetera, we don't see these women doing the things we want to do. But for men, a lot of the time it's seeing men doing the things that men want to do, or people want to do, and fucking it up.
Mm.
Being outed as bad people.
Yeah.
Which is obviously equally going to have an effect.
I mean, we've literally just spoken about, you know, obviously a lot of rape is perpetrated by men, and that's in the news a lot. And there's, you know, a lot of Hollywood males who yep. are now being shown for the people that they actually are, and it's like they were successful.
Mm.
And I can only imagine what it's like for a cis white male right now. I'm not one, so I don't know.
That's a mind-blowing thought.
Yeah.
Providing empathy to the cis white man.
We need to hear from one.
What?
What one is out there. We need to get in touch.
I know some.
Give an opinion.
Mm. So that was reminding me of Aziz Ansari and how mm-hmm. he let us down big time, and how it caused such big media outrage, but also I don't think anyone was that surprised. I think you expect all men to have done something a bit shady.
You think?
It doesn't surprise me at all. So I've written before about one night when I was lying in bed, I started thinking, I wonder how many of my sexual encounters have left me feeling like that was 100% okay. And I know that 100% okay is a bit idealistic, but how many of them do I feel a bit like they were pressuring in some way or another? Mm. Or there was something about it that left me feeling a bit like, I wish they hadn't tried to do that or pushed in this way or that way. Or even if I said no and was fine, but how many of them were just, I left and felt good. Like, regardless of sexual pleasure, I left feeling, like, comfortable and okay.
Okay.
And I did the maths, because this is what I do when I lie in bed at night, and worked out that it was, like, 3% of my sexual encounters, which obviously it's a very, it's a really unstable statistic, and mm-hmm. It's not reliable at all, basically, but, the trend there, that it's so low. I know good men that have not treated me the way I'd want to be treated sexually.
Mm.
And I just think, I don't know, I do think most men are kind of capable of it at some point in their lives. In the same way that the women are.
I mean, I've obviously certainly had that experience as well, and where you feel very much of the power imbalance. But I don't think it would be as low as 3%. And I'm not really sure. I think the only way to go into something like that and prevent that feeling is being kind of formal and having a conversation about it beforehand. Like, so this is me, this is what this is what I don't like.
Yeah.
You need to respect my boundaries. I think, you know, a lot of people call it hard nose and soft nose.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are things that maybe if you were in the mood, you might do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There are things that you will absolutely never do, no matter what the circumstance.
Mm.
And I understand that's quite difficult if it's something casual, if it's a fling, if it's a one-night stand.
Mm.
Like, how do you go into that?
Yeah.
Yeah, but in relationships, definitely, you need to have that conversation.
Mm. Need to try a relationship sometime.
They're fine. They're okay.
Oh god, this is dating with Hannah and Nina. No.
Relationships are fine, dating is fine.
It is fine.
Oh Oh dear.
Okay.
But I mean, obviously, I would say 50% good experience, 50% less so, but not necessarily bad.
Yeah, I'm not saying that these are bad experiences, but just leaving you with a bit of a feeling.
A bit of ick.
Yeah. Mm. Or just like even one moment in it that makes me think, ooh, they weren't thinking of me.
I wonder if they get that.
No fucking way, bro. I've spoken to people about it since, because I had a look when I published this article that I wrote about it. I knew which people were going to message me and say, I hope that wasn't me. And I knew. And it was the 3% of people that were the good ones.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, bless them. I know. Their little golden hearts.
I know. And they're the ones that I don't fancy because they're too nice.
Got a complex. That's a whole thing.
Anyway,
have you got a story?
I don't have a story, but
yeah,
I have an app.
Go ahead.
So
I love an app.
Yeah. So I was scrolling the Facebook and I saw an ad for this app that I just really wanted to be real, and I thought it was real, and I got really excited, and I thought it was really funny. It's called Lickster, and it's But there's good news at the end. So I'm just going to play you a bit of this advert that they made for it, because I thought it was really funny. It's an app to teach men how to be better at, like, cunnilingus they use in the video, but cunnilingus is such a weird word.
It's a proper American.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a real American term. What basically, use? Like, oral sex.
Is that what you say?
Oral sex? Yeah.
That's how you say it?
Why not?
I don't know, because it sounds so formal.
It's just what it is.
Do you say that in bed?
Basically, a human being going down on a lady's vagina.
Just say it normally. You're allowed to say it normally.
Vagina.
You don't have to put on a funny voice.
Well, you told me off for being too formal with oral sex. There was also very many hand movements there, which you'll never have seen.
There was a whole triangle situation. But in fairness, I quite sincerely say licking fanny, so...
Oh!
I just think fanny's a brilliant word.
That's the other way to say it.
The other way to say it. Anyway, this is a little bit of the advert that they made for it.
Sometimes you gotta put your money where your mouth is. And sometimes you gotta put your mouth where her vagina is. Lickster, stop fingering your phone and start licking it.
But part of the advert, they had someone doing it, like, they showed people playing it in public places, and one of them was a guy on the tube just, like, licking his phone.
Yeah,
It says, and it also has voice feedback to keep you motivated. And this was the funniest bit on it, because she said, like, it was a woman's, like, a robotic woman's voice, and it goes, like, I'm coming in about half an hour.
Half an hour?
Yeah. Oof. Or, like, I'm coming, like, at some point soon or something, but not yet. And I'm like, yeah, that's it. But it actually is a real app. That's what I was going to say. I think
is it real?
I think it must have been made after. But they advertised it as Lickster. And
have you got it?
Yeah. I downloaded it. I haven't tried it with my tongue because hygiene, but...
Yeah, I mean, licking your phone. Ew, phones are gross.
Yeah. Anyway, so if anyone... Yeah.
That's fun.
It's not a hint.
Little hobby.
Have you got anything else? Please tell me it's not serious.
It's not serious.
Oh, no. I should have done that at the end.
Hey, I like to hear about all these things.
I know.
Well, I've got two more things to go.
Okay.
One of them's like kind of serious, and one of them's just like good news. So we'll do good news, and we'll move on to serious.
No, I think you should do it the other way around.
No, we can't follow up cunnilingus app.
Oh, okay. Cunnilingus. Continue.
Okay, so I feel really ashamed of myself.
Okay, that's a different story. How are we going to go into that then?
Because I missed my opportunity to mention UK Black History Month, which is October. We did podcast episodes in October and didn't mention it.
Okay,
so I feel like rubbish human.
Mm.
So I'm coming back to this. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because it was only like a few days ago I came across this article on ID celebrating key Black British figures.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collaboration between ID and Abode Stock, and they commissioned three young British artists to bring to life the iconic Black British individuals who have influenced or are influencing the UK's Black history in pop art and Impressionist styles.
Oh, specific.
Yeah. And I want to pick up on one person in particular that was celebrated through this.
Do it.
So Letitia Wright was one of the people who were celebrated, and she was the breakout actress of blockbuster Black Panther.
I have heard of this.
Yeah, as soundtracked by Kendrick Lamar. It was amazing.
I think you like Kendrick Lamar.
I love Kendrick
not?
Lamar. So Letitia Wright is influential to both the young and old for her counterculture depiction of being a Black teenage scientific genius in the Marvel Universe.
Some things I will never be.
I know. Coupled with the current underrepresentation of Black women in the STEM field.
What, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get what STEM is, but yes. I don't know what STEM is. Why is
STEM,
it STEM?
Science, technology... I think it's electronics and maths. Engineering and maths. Yeah, science, technology, engineering and maths, okay. I believe.
They're just getting a list of things that I'm not going to be good at.
So coupled with the underrepresentation of women in the STEM field, this role also inspires Black women to pursue careers in fields they wouldn't normally be encouraged to.
I'm all about the encouraging.
It's a very cool like character that we haven't seen before in the Marvel Universe, mm-hmm. and very, very rarely in the film industry as a whole.
Good work. Yeah. I approve.
Yeah. If we're ready to move on to Badass Woman from History.
I'm so excited.
That one ties in really, really well because it's about a woman in the science industry.
Okay.
And this episode, we're going to move away from music. As much as I loved our Badass Woman in Music, to go into the field of medicine. I'm going to give a little bit of personal background to how I got to this story.
Yep.
So the other week, my friend Liv came over and she's currently on the NHS management grad scheme.
Yeah, I remember telling me about this.
And she's listened to the podcast, is a fan.
Big up.
Obviously. But one of the first things she said to me as we sat down, she was like, I've got a great woman from history for your podcast.
I've had that so many times. Yeah, and I love it.
I love the recommendations.
The guy I teach French to sent me an email just out of the blue.
Oh, bless him.
You know, she's like, I saw this and I thought of you. Is this the kind of thing you mean? I was like, that is exactly what we mean. Yeah. Thank you very much. You've done my research for me.
This is the point it's going to get to, and then we don't have to do research anymore. But anyway, she told me about two female doctors from history, which included the UK's first female doctor, Elizabeth Garrett Anderson, who passed her medical exams in 1865, and also Margaret Ann Buckley, who disguised herself as a man throughout her career in medicine.
Mulan!
As James Barry, until her death, which was also in 1865. So James Barry, the male doctor, because everyone assumes that James Barry was a male until death, and then they discovered that James Barry was actually a female.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's intense.
And there's a reason that Margaret Ann Buckley is not considered as the first female doctor, because she, on all of her documents, was a man.
Okay.
Dressed as a man.
Yeah.
Gave herself a male name. So she was very much like playing into their world. And for all we know, she might have been a trans person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when James Barry died in 1865 is when Elizabeth Garrett Anderson graduated with a medical degree. The same year.
That's weird.
I know, isn't it? It's like history. Passing of the torch.
Oh my god.
Oh. So I was like, right, sick. I know who I'm going to do for my story.
And then you found someone else.
And then
that's what happens.
Every time.
Yeah.
So I like innocently Googled.
Innocently? As opposed to what? Like
guilty.
Illicitly? You're searching in Pornhub instead of Google?
I naively Googled who is the very first female doctor in history.
Mm-hmm.
In the world, thinking I would get Elizabeth Garrett Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
I did not.
Nope.
After much research, I came across a woman called Dorothea Exleben.
That's a good name, but yep.
Which, she's German.
Okay.
Dorothea Exleben is unique for being the very first female physician to be recognised in any country. And what's even cooler is that it was in 1754.
Say what?
That she was granted a medical degree by the University of Halle.
I didn't think we had women then.
We only had wives and mothers.
Wives and mothers. What's a woman?
Just a wife and a mother. Sometimes
it
a sister.
It can't be me, I'm but a humble mother.
What is this voice we're doing? We need to stop right now. I actually don't like it.
I can't stop. Anywho.
Back in the past, they had women.
Okay.
Who also happened
to... Just finding this out now. Big bombshell to drop on me.
So, let's get into the life and times of Dorothea Exleben.
Yes, please.
She was born on 13th of November 1715 in Quedlinburg to the physician Christian Polycarp Lepurin and his wife Anna Sophia. Dorothea was bright and a quick learner. Her father was determined that she should share the same education as her younger brother Christian. Good dadding. Both children studied Latin, and that was done with a local schoolmaster, and they learned science and medicine from their father because he was a doctor.
They learned medicine as a kidling.
As a kidling.
Fucking hell.
Yes. As a kidling in Quedlinburg.
Put that on a t-shirt.
So obviously at the time, like, women of a certain class would get an education as a child, but it was really, really not commonplace for women to have further education as an adult. And it was entirely unheard of that a woman would study medicine. However, with the encouragement of both her brother and father.
Yes, fam.
Yeah. Dorothea petitioned Frederick II of Prussia, no less.
Eh?
Yeah. Yeah, just go right to the top, as
fucking
you do.
Hell.
So she petitioned Frederick II of Prussia for permission to enter the University of Halle with her brother. This was granted in 1741, but Dorothea...
I'm going to start asking the Queen for things. What are you, Queenie? Can I have that bit of land?
Imagine, though, like, if she gave you approval, fine, sorted. Yeah. But she didn't actually go to university. And...
As in she just didn't go to lectures?
No, she didn't go to the university. Right, okay. She stayed at home.
Because, like, in the way I didn't go to university, all the way.
No, the actual way. Yeah, going okay. And, like, there's various accounts, but it's generally believed that Christian, her brother, went into the military, and she didn't want to go to university without her brother there to, give her support and protection, because how they were really close. Yeah. So instead of going to university on her own, she did probably what is the expected opposite. And got married.
Oh, honey. I'm sorry for your loss.
I don't think it doesn't seem to be a bad thing, yeah. So we'll run with it. So in 1742, she married Johann Christian Exleben, a widowed clergyman with five children.
Jesus.
And she would have four more children of her own.
Ooh,
yeah.
Where are the training wheels there? She jumped straight in with five and then was like, you know what? I need to round this up.
Almost. Round it up? It's nine. Nine is not... Anyway, it's a lot. However, despite her domestic life, her motherly life, you know, she'd just taken on five stepchildren, she still continued to study and practice medicine.
Wait, she was practicing without... Okay, it was...
So she stayed at home, she got married, starts, like, looking after kids, looking to have kids of her own, but that has not stopped her one little bit. In the first year of her marriage, she published a book describing and arguing against the factors that prevented women from studying. She condemns the idea that women's education is a waste of time, goes against religious teaching, damages their health and strength.
I mean, it does damage my health, but...
That's just you.
I won't speak for all women.
Or prevents them from carrying out their proper, and I'm doing those sarcastic quote marks with my hands.
Yes.
Proper domestic duties. All of these beliefs she disproved in her own life, as she showed by successfully combining the role of clergy wife, mother to nine children, and her work in medicine.
She doesn't do things by halves, does she?
No.
She's not just a wife, she's a... What's a clergy wife? Wait, what's a clergyman? Is it a priest man?
Yeah, yeah. He was a Lutheran priest, okay. Lutheran preacher, a Lutheran clergyman.
How many times are you going to say Luther?
I would actually like to mention something about the book.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind this was the 1700s, so she's not going to be perfect. She addressed the book to both male and female readers, and she was well aware that both parties would have something to go against
mm-hmm.
it, so that's the reason she did that. But she strongly criticised women for lacking the drive to get further education.
Okay.
So in one part she recognises that women have duties at home, they are mothers, and any jobs they do get is probably hard labour. You know, working out in fields or working in your cottages.
No, we're not at factories yet,
we're not at factories
we?
Yet, no.
Okay.
Not Industrial Revolution just yet. So, you know, work was hard if you had work, and if you didn't, you were running a household. She understood that, but she also thought it was a double-edged sword in the fact that women lacked the drive for education, and she was quite strong in her criticism.
I can kind of see where she's coming from. It's one of these things where if you think you can do it, it's like, why can't... it's very Alan Sugar.
I also wouldn't make the comparison to Alan Sugar, because let's not go there.
For a number of reasons. But you know what I mean? That self-made thing where it's like, I've...
But she was also a well-off
woman
living in Germany. She had the support of her father, who was a doctor, and her brother, who was by her side the whole time. She had private schooling.
Yeah.
She had the money to be able to afford to go to university.
She's not in a position to talk about drive, really. Yeah. Even if it is an issue.
It's this factor of not being aware of your privilege and then like talking down to everyone else who doesn't
there
have
the no
same privilege.
There were no hashtags back then, though. Do you remember that?
Mm.
She had no
imagine
one.
If there were. So different.
Oh.
But saying that, it was still an important text for the time.
Yeah.
She was still a great example of what could be done if women were given education.
Yeah.
So, jumping ahead a little bit to 1747, her father has died, leaving the Leporin family with considerable debts.
Oh.
So this is another stopper to her going to university.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She seems to be able to practice without it, so...
Yeah, she does that. Her husband's health has also deteriorated, and the bulk of responsibilities of her large family have now fallen to her.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is still happening today, isn't it?
Yeah.
Women are expected to carry the load of a family, usually. Not always. But she refused to be discouraged and regularly practiced medicine in Quedlinburg without a degree. As
this
you
is my favourite part of the story.
She was highly respected by her patients. And
I'm glad.
Yeah. And
she ain't got the certificate on the wall, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and basically everyone in town loved her. However, her popularity angered some of the local physicians. Obviously,
I mean,
men.
Yeah, but also if they went to uni and
I understand. Yeah, I understand their beef.
But she didn't. Yeah, yeah. No, it's different. If someone starts going around telling stories about gender, sexuality and culture without my MA, I swear to God.
I mean, that's what I do right now.
Yep.
I don't have that.
That's all right, you're allowed.
Okay, thanks so much for your permission. So yeah, they were basically out to get her, all these other male physicians in the town. And the prime time for their attack came with the death of one of Dorothea's patients.
Wait, say that again. Sorry.
The prime time. Of their attack.
I thought you said the prime time their attack. And I was like, is that going to be on the next episode of Doctor Who? Because we'd watch that.
Prime time with attack. So yeah, one of Dorothea's patients died, and it gave the other physicians a perfect opportunity to accuse her formerly of quackery.
Wait.
Quackery?
Her what of quackery?
They accused her formerly of quackery.
Formerly of quackery.
Yeah. Because am I not talking properly?
I don't know. I think it might be me. But I just love the idea of formally accusing someone of quackery.
Well, it was
as opposed to unofficially.
It was a crime. Yeah, yeah. Especially then. They also called her a witch.
Yeah, that is the go-to, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was because she treated a patient without seeing them face to face.
I think that's
actually a crime now. But
Wait.
I mean, it was one patient. Again, it's like one patient died. How many of their patients died? Gotcha. One patient she didn't see, personally.
Wait, so how...
I think she gave them a prescription. Skype? Maybe a repeat prescription.
Right.
Maybe Skype. I don't know the technology in the 1700s. Neither do you. That's why we're doing a podcast.
I'm assuming Skype was involved. It seems the only way.
They also, these horrible physicians, referred to her as a dear lady who considers herself a doctor only by the virtue of the fact that she can toss around some broken Latin and French.
What can they do?
I mean, they can probably speak Latin and French. It was a requirement for going to university at the time. But it's just like, petty. So petty. Anywho.
They're jealous.
Yeah. So.
Threatened.
So one of her patients, one of her patients died. And then in 1753, so we're now 6 years after her father's death, she's taken over the medical practice of her father.
Big up.
Yeah. Three local doctors filed lawsuits against Dorothea, charging her with medical quackery, as we...
What is that? Do you know what that
like,
is?
It's a quack doctor. So someone who is performing as a doctor without having the qualifications, which is completely true.
That's what I've been taking the piss out of her for, but I just wasn't using the word quackery.
Quackery.
Which I need to use in my vocabulary.
This, again, despite everything that's happened, did not deter her. She responded to the legal challenge by answering to several charges made against her. These included charges that she allowed herself to be called Frau Doktorin.
As in Mr.
Frau is Mrs. Herr is Mr.
Oh, wait.
Frau Doktorin. Like,
what's wrong with that?
Like, Lady Doctor, I think.
Wait.
Anyway, this is one of the charges that have been put against her, is that she allowed herself to be called Frau Doktorin.
As in, like, so she was giving herself the label doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay.
That she often visited patients, and she sometimes accepted money for her services. She responded to these accusations by asserting that her accusers had never brought forward anyone who could call her Frau Doktorin.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd never heard someone call me that, and she hadn't either. Basically, you're lying.
I've never heard anyone say that.
She did admit that sometimes she accepted payment, and she did visit patients. But she also stated that, with God's help, I cured people who gave me nothing but their best wishes. Would my gentlemen adversaries have me deny help to the poor? Oh, wait, are they going to say no to that and look like absolute knobheads? Don't think so.
It's a good comeback.
She topped all this off by coming back at these three local doctors with a 16-page letter calling the accusations gross insults to the truth.
Ooh.
And concluding... Sorry, go on.
No, it's not.
What?
It reminds me of the letter of Ross. Rachel writes to Ross in Friends when he cheats on her.
Really? How?
Just like, I don't know.
It's all a lie.
It was a long letter. Anyway. Pop culture.
Good.
Heard of that.
Current reference. And she concluded her defence by offering to take a qualifying examination to be a doctor.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Mm. But it was on the condition that her accusers also took the same exam.
Oh.
Yeah. Guess what they did? Refused to.
Of course they fucking did.
Of course they fucking did.
They've never read a book in their lives.
Yeah. So yeah, they refused to take any exams. They took these claims further. This is when they brought in the witch accusations. They also brought in the fact that because she was a woman and able to get pregnant, that those pregnancies would impede her work as a doctor. They literally would not be alive without pregnancy. They can shut up.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Mm.
Hannah just like mic dropped her nose. Just dropped them on the floor.
Silently mic dropped my notes.
You can't mic drop anything but a mic, but you just did, so.
Freaking note drop. Okay, so the case was delayed because Dorothea was pregnant, so they were like, you can't do your job because you're always pregnant. And then she got pregnant and was like, well, I'll see you in a bit.
She's like, don't be so stupid. I wouldn't. Oh, shit. No contraception, though. Not her fault.
No, it really isn't. By this time, and probably due to the delay, the case was brought to current ruler Frederick the Great. He gave the approval for the solution that Dorothea should have an examination and submit a dissertation to the University of Halle, where she originally wanted to go.
Yeah.
Full circle. What's really, really cool. So I'm like loving Frederick at the minute.
Yeah.
This Frederick the Second. He originally wanted her to go to university, said that was cool, and he's now said again, despite these accusations, like, yeah, take the exam.
Go for it.
As well as having the king on her side, she also had the university's rector, Dr. Johann Juncker.
Good name.
Yes, who believed the value of higher education for women and was able to advance sufficiently strong historical and legal arguments in favour of allowing Dorothea to sit for medical degree.
Big up.
In his evidence, he also used another woman from Quedlinburg, who was the first female lawyer. What a cool town.
Next time.
Mm.
Who is she?
I think it might have been the first female lawyer in Germany. I'll have to do my research. But yeah, like for one town, that's a lot going on.
Maybe we should change the podcast just to Women of Quedlinburg.
Quedlinburg, sick town.
Is that the name?
Yeah.
Quedlinburg, sick town. Pretty sick, isn't it?
Leave me alone. Right, I'm going to get back to Dorothea. So she submitted her dissertation to the University of Halle, which was titled Concerning the Swift and Pleasant, but for that reason, Less than Full Cure of Illnesses.
I think there's a whole bunch of unnecessary words in there. It's quite clear that there were no applications to proofread her.
Yeah, I don't really know. And it had quite a lot of radical suggestions for the way that doctors went about their practice. And these suggestions became popular throughout Germany, especially with women. And Dorothea eventually translated her dissertation from Latin into German.
Wait. She wrote her diss in Latin?
Yeah, you had to at the time.
Fuck off.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I thought I had to write mine in French and it was the best thing to ever happen to me that I found out I didn't have to. It's like, English, yay!
Yeah, she just wrote hers in Latin.
Oh, pick up. I need to stop saying pick up. Small down.
So she eventually translated it from Latin to German so that more people throughout Germany could read her advice, essentially. And her examination took place on May 6th,
1954. Did it? Did it? How old was she when she sat this exam, Anna? 200, And she became the oldest woman in history to sit. Anyway, so when did she sit? tell me about when she sat her examinations.
I'm going to cut that bit out. So Dorothea sat her exam on May 6, 1754. And she was awarded her medical degree on June 12th of the same year. On the day of her graduation, there was a big celebration at the university, and she was asked to give a speech.
Yes.
Part of that speech, she kind of spoke about how she felt like all of her weaknesses as a woman were on show, because she wasn't a good public speaker. Which was a bit, I was like, girl, come on, you've done well. However, she also did say, when accepting her accomplishments as a medical doctor, that she would do so without arrogance, but also without fear.
That, it needs to be a thing that everybody does everything. Mm-hmm.
That needs to be, like, on a little poster to put on my wall.
Also the worst sentence I've ever said. What did I just say? That needs to be the thing that everyone does everything. What?
but accurate.
Yeah.
Yes. So without arrogance, but also without fear. And what's interesting is that the remainder of Dorothea's life and medical career was pretty uneventful, but also successful. She enjoyed the support from her large family.
I mean, you've got to get some benefits from that, fucking hell. Well, 9 kids and not one of them's going to drop you at work. I hope so.
Oh, yeah. She's got 9 kids to rely on. That's pretty good. She also got great respect from the townspeople of Quedlinburg. She practiced medicine there until her death on June 13th, 1762. And, she's pretty well known in Germany, not so well known outside of Germany. And what's quite cool is in 1987, the German Federal Post Office issued a postage stamp honouring her as part of its ongoing definitive stamp series, The Women of German History. It's pretty cool. I want to be a stamp.
I know, but I was just going to say how funny it is that we hold, like, who goes on a stamp is just such a big honour. No one even fucking uses stamps anymore.
I used a stamp the other day, I'll have you know.
To be honest, I used...
It was a Christmas stamp.
I use them all the time, but I'm very aware that stamps are kind of a bit... they're a bit passé.
This was the 80s. Yeah. Stamplet in.
But it is... I would still think it a massive honour to be on a stamp.
Yeah, I want to be on a stamp.
Can't think of a much higher credential, to be honest.
Being on money.
Is that better than being on a stamp?
Yeah, it lasts longer.
Yeah, you go through more people's
But
stamps.
I will take a stamp any day, by the way. Post office, if you're listening.
I don't think they decide.
Put me on a stamp.
Yes. I've got a collection of stamps, you know.
Uh-huh. You want to share this with the podcast listeners?
Well, it's actually quite sweet.
Okay.
My granddad decided that when me and my cousins were born, he was going to start collecting stamps for all of us to, like, document our lives.
That's so sweet.
So I have 5 giant books of stamps.
What? I thought you were going to say 5 stamps.
No.
5 books of
5
stamps.
5 giant books. He stopped doing them when we got to the age of 18, each of us. But for some reason, he stopped when I'm the youngest cousin. He stopped a bit younger for me.
So I've done enough stamping, stamp collecting.
Nope. But yeah, it's really good. It, like, documents my entire life, all the stamps from 1996 to whenever I was 18.
That's
or
so
17.
Cute.
Yeah.
Aww. Yeah. So one last thing to say about Dorothea Exleben is that she was an exception in German medical history for the next 150 years. And it was only at the start of the 20th century that women would be admitted to German medical schools.
150 years.
She was a doctor in Quedlinburg in Germany, and for the next 150 years there was no more female doctors.
In the world?
In Germany.
In Germany.
Yeah. Possibly we'll come back to this topic because there's so many cool stories of women becoming doctors for the first time in their countries, in their communities. But yeah, for Germany, that was it for 150 years.
There's always one pioneering person. Mm. Like, obviously a combination of circumstance and individual personality, etc. There's always one person that just does everything. So I think you'd hate them. Imagine if you're in school with them, you would hate them.
She was an exceptional person, clearly. She was very intelligent, very bright. She also had a lot on her side. She had the support of her father, which is massive, support of her brother. She had the absolute tenacity about her that when she wanted to be a doctor, she just was.
Yeah.
So I'm fine. I know that I can do it. I'll do it. I'm not going to recommend that in the current climate, like right now. Go to university, get a degree.
Yeah, please don't.
Don't just start practicing medicine. Mm. But she obviously proved that she was qualified to be a doctor in the end.
Yeah.
And that came in the face of 3 local physicians having a go at her.
I wonder if we could find out more about them. And
I don't think we need to.
Heckle their family.
Let's just, don't do that.
I know, I'm joking.
It's not their fault.
Did you know your great-granddad?
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Hannah.
That's the end. Dorothy Exleben, the first female doctor.
Dorothy, cool gal.
Yeah, she was pretty cool, didn't she?
I enjoyed that.
Good.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Should we do some listener stories?
Yeah.
I'll do mine because you've just been speaking for ages.
Thank you. I need some wine.
Mine is really long.
Okay.
In a good way.
Okay.
And I'm happy about it because I know it's going to be brilliant. Okay, are you ready to do some listening?
Yeah.
Do you want to get your wine ready? Or anything
wine
else that makes noise.
Is ready.
Okay. So this thank you. That was necessary. Okay, so this is one from our email. That's what she said, listeners@gmail.com. Please email us. The subject line, it's Bjorkney, bitch.
Love it already.
Me too. Okay. So, as usual, I'm just going to read the words as they're written. A lot of people see Bjork as some weirdo who wore that swan dress and screams a lot. And while those things are true, Bjork is a huge inspiration to me and many others. Perhaps the most innovative artist around, she's done a lot of things that that might have slipped under people's radar. Bjork is an inspiration because she's been doing what she loves since she was really young. She released her first album at the age of 11. Although it was a bunch of Icelandic covers of famous songs by the likes of Stevie Wonder and the Beatles, and she turned down the chance to record another album, I assume? I think, yeah. She used the money to buy herself a piano, and that's when she started composing. She carved her own path and made her own legacy. Since then, her music has been such an inspiration to me and so many other women. She writes and produces all of her own work, and her 1997 album, Homogenic, has paved the way for electronic musicians still to this day. Despite this, misogyny in the music industry has always been at her heels. If you were to look at all the headlines and gossip around Bjork since she started, everyone is always calling her crazy, weird, or that kooky Icelandic bitch or something. Male musicians who do great things are heralded for their genius, but if a woman dares to do something different, they're dismissed as eccentric. But she keeps going. Her 2011 album, Biophilia, was a big deal for me. It was a time when I loved biology and considered pursuing it at university, but ultimately I had to drop it as I wasn't science-minded enough. She just put that, but I feel like that should be in inverted commas because I'm not sure science-minded is a real thing. But that's just me. This came as a huge blow, but Biophilia, a concept album surrounding science and nature and their relationship to music, opened up the idea to me that science didn't have to be something only really smart people could pursue academically. There we go.
Yeah.
But it can also just be something to be enjoyed and explored at your own pace, whatever your level. Biophilia is more than an album. It started as a multimedia project and became what most people consider the first app album. The dictionary.com definition for biophilia is a love of life and the living world, the affinity of human beings for other life forms. And one look at the track listing for the album confirms this, with songs titled Moon, Thunderbolt, Cosmogony, and Virus, among others. Musically, the beats and other sounds often replicate natural representations of biological processes or even the moon cycle. The app that came with the album was rolled out as an educational tool in schools all across Europe. So I hope that there are some other kids out there who love science but can't study it for shit, who are inspired by biophilia to do their own thing. I even got a biophilia tattoo on my 18th birthday.
Wow.
Her last album, Utopia, which came out a year ago this month, is quite rich with feminist themes, following her previous heartbreak album, Volnicura, which documented her divorce. The timing was also important. It was the height of the Me Too movement, and she had just spoken out about director Lars von Trier and his harassment of her while making Dancer in the Dark. Utopia is a resistance against traditional melody and songwriting and the patriarchy, with lyrics like, break the chain of the fuck-ups of the fathers. It is time for us women to rise and not just take it lying down. It is time, the world is listening. There are many reasons why Bjork is an inspiration to me and many others, but we would be here for days if I listed them all. Her music can get you through sad times and make happy times even happier, all while saving the world one concept album at a time.
What?
I love that. Did I say who that was? That was Kira.
Thank you, Kira.
On our Gmail. Thank you so much, Kira.
I also love Bjork. Just to interject, a little bit of personal info. Volnicura is like one of my favourite albums.
Yes.
Especially from Bjork. And it was mostly produced by Bjork. And there was also a producer on there called The Hacks and Click. He's like a very like well-known, respected producer.
Okay.
And across like music reviews, like social media, whatever, everyone's like, Volnicura by Bjork, produced by Hacks and Click. She came out and was like, by the way, he produced like 30% of it.
Yeah.
I produced most of it. But because he was on the credits, everyone assumed that as a male producer, he was responsible.
He was the producer.
He was the producer, but it wasn't. It was very much her taking the lead, and he coming in to help.
Yeah. Well, also, it's Bjork's birthday today.
Is it? Yeah. What are we on today? What's
so
the date?
Our day of recording. So
21st of November.
So happy birthday, Bjork.
Yay, happy birthday.
That's our little homage to you. I don't know shit about Bjork, not going to lie. But that makes me want to listen to her.
She's awesome. Yeah.
It's exciting. I really enjoyed that. That was really, really good.
I love it too.
People are good at writing. Writing the words.
I love that, like, such an, like, indirect way of celebrating your interest in science.
Yeah. I hadn't thought of that at all.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It is cool. It's very cool. All right. So I have two stories based on the same anonymous source.
Okay.
And I'm going to read them both out in one go because I feel like they relate quite well to each other.
Okay.
So it's the same person writing to us. Our listener says, "My mother, she unknowingly married an alcoholic drug addict and brought up three children with him and helped him recover in rehab twice. For all their own weaknesses and strengths, she taught us about magic and doing what makes you happy." It's very, like, short and swift, but it's, like, very indicative of...
It talks about magic.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, I have no idea what they mean.
I think it's just finding the magic in life. And, like, finding those little bits of happiness that even despite all the darkness... Like, obviously, this mother was a real, like, beacon of light in this person's life.
Yeah. Also, equally cool if she was teaching them how to take a rabbit out of a hat. I support that also.
Card tricks.
Yeah.
Okay, so the same person has got to us and a story about their sister.
Okay.
So they say, after a childhood of neglect, bullying and assault, she gave birth to twins. Her partner was abusive and she found the wisdom to leave that relationship. She is strong and passionate. She now raises two fiery and cute children and is studying a degree in childcare to champion children's rights to safety and care.
Fiery and cute in the same sentence is my new favourite thing on earth.
What I want to be.
Yeah, that's so lovely. Yeah.
I think that's just like, this person's obviously got in touch and has these two very, very strong women in their life that haven't had the best of luck and have encountered people that have their own demons and have, through their own volition, have come through this.
I hope they know that they are an inspiration to this person.
I know, and like good, strong mothers.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's my listener stories for this week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for everyone for sending those in. As ever, we need more and more, always. Keep them coming.
Yes, please.
That's what she said, listeners, at gmail.com. Or even if you wanted to contact us on any of the social medias, just get your stories in. We'd love to read them out. What are our social medias, Hannah?
So on Facebook, if you just search That's What She Said podcast, you'll find us. And on Instagram.
I know this one.
Yeah.
That's What She Said _ podcast.
That's What She Said _ podcast.
Yep.
Yeah, on Instagram.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're both of us, we're always on there, so you'll be able to find us very easily if you'd like to get in touch.
And we just want to know what you have to say about everything we've talked about. We want to criticise us.
Praise us.
Praise us. Ask questions. Tell
discuss.
Us where we were wrong. We weren't wrong.
We were probably very wrong on pronunciations.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you, and thank you for listening again, and thank you for coming back, and thank you for existing.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'm actually wanting to finish on a little extra something.
Oh my god, I'm so excited. I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah. So it could have gone into current news, but I do just want to set this piece aside as something extra. So today we're recording on the 21st of November, and yesterday... it was the Transgender Day of Remembrance.
It was indeedy.
Yeah, this came to my attention via the Thirsty Girls Collective on Instagram. Yeah, love them. And I'm going to read the description they gave to their post. Today is Transgender Day of Remembrance. Today we remember and mourn the trans people we have lost due to violence and bigotry. 369 people have been murdered so far this year just because they were trans. Enough is enough. More needs to be done to protect trans lives. You can make a difference by calling out transphobia, educating yourselves and others, and supporting trans charities. Trans people deserve better.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Good.
I thought so.
I would think with this, it's people have believe political opinions about it, and all it boils down to, in my opinion, is people are in danger.
Yeah, I think, you know, people are dying unnecessarily, and a lot of that is because they are under attack, and those who could help are simply not aware.
Yeah.
That these things are happening, that people are suffering such hate, unnecessary hate, and if they had more people to rally around them, they could be insulated, and we could perhaps begin to change the opinions of those perpetrators of hate and ignorance. And I think it's just really, really important that we have these days to remember that every single person out there who is trans, who is transitioning, who is a friend or family member of a trans person, you know, we should all come together. And even if you don't know a single person in this world who is trans, why not rally around?
Yeah,
because we're all people.
The
all
internet
humans.
Use that.
Yeah, the internet is great for that.
Have you heard of it?
So yeah, there we go.
Cool, thanks Hannah.
That's what she said. Podcast number 3.
Yeah,
done.
We should do this again sometime.
Yeah, 2 weeks, see you then.
Oh, that's when. Oh my god, it's like we have a structure.
Got it. Oh my god.
Okay, bye.
Bye.